Well, thank you very much, Mr. Light. Good afternoon to you all. Happy Sabbath. At least I hope it has been a happy Sabbath for you. It's been a wonderful Sabbath for us so far. As has often been the case here in recent days, our backyard has been declared officially as an air combat zone. Our hummingbirds have been very, very feisty. We have one who has declared himself owner, king, and ruler of the feeder. We have at least two other ones that are constantly testing the defenses. I almost thought I saw a missile launch today. They were really getting aggressive. I'm very glad they're not equipped with machine guns or any other form of weaponry, because we would probably no longer have any hummingbirds. And hopefully not, but maybe there may be another combat zone this evening at the lights. I hope that doesn't happen. I'm pretty sure it'll all work out. I think things will go well. I really do. Okay. Brethren, we are, without a doubt, living in unprecedented times. I think we all realize that. If one can bear to look at the news anymore, the concepts of law, rule, and honor seem to be increasingly disregarded. There is an utter disregard being developed for these concepts. In fact, in this country, the U.S. was once known as a nation of law. Now this nation, from observation, seems to be becoming a nation of lawbreakers. I think we can see that. More and more of the people of this nation, and indeed the world, are coming to live by the codes, when the cat's away, the mice will play. And rules were meant to be broken, or rules were meant for other people. When people know they can get away with something, they will most likely do it. Whether it's speeding, theft, robbery, whatever it might be, people are fearing repercussion less and less. They think they can get away with it. The police are being subdued. And now our leaders have become seemingly weak, seemingly rudderless, and are openly advocating sinful practices. It seems that not a day goes by anymore without seeing something in the news about our leaders and the leaders of the world doing something outlandish, outrageous, or downright illegal. Many of them have lifestyles that are heinous, they're immoral, they're evil, and they're just plain repulsive to God. And by doing so, they're setting an example for their constituency to do the same. And now we have the year 2020, the year of the COVID-19 virus, among other things. Consider how this crisis has been handled by leaders in terms of rules, regulation, and confusion of those same things. The ever-shifting goalposts that we keep hearing about. Rules are constantly changing from one week to the next as far as how to handle this situation that the world is in. One day we hear one thing, the next something else. We see businesses like restaurants opening and then being told to close again, and oh, you can open, and then they close again. And they are suffering financially. Their employees are suffering. Things are going under for them. I'm a state employee, and I get to see some of these decisions that are made at fairly close hand. And some of them just honestly make me shake my head. It's just amazing as they're trying to cope with these things that they don't understand. Well, as our leaders continue to go astray further and further from the ways of God, and are now operating from a sense of uncertainty, fear, or desire for power, hunger for power even, or trying desperately to govern people from their own sense of truth and fact, whatever that might look like, what do we as the people of God do being mixed into the situation? What do we do? As leaders in the world rule from a point of domination, despotism, or fear, or even a sense of liberty and freedom, how do we look upon those in positions of authority in the world and in our society? What do we do when what they do, or legislate, conflicts with what we feel is reasonable and just, or worse, when their rule conflicts with the laws and ways of God. How do we handle this? What do we do? Well, the title of my message today is, What is Our Attitude Toward Authority? What is our attitude toward authority? I just want to talk about this today. I want for us to just consider our thoughts, our actions, our feelings, our concerns toward those in power over us and their actions as we go through this message. First of all, let me just throw out a quick definition for the word authority, as is given in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Their definition of authority is the power to give orders or make decisions, the power or right to direct or control someone or something. An authority also defines the confident quality of someone who knows a lot about a particular subject or who is respected or obeyed by other people. This is describing people in authority: kings, prime ministers, presidents, governors, mayors, police chiefs, your boss if you're employed, maybe your spouse depending on how things work. I'm going to hear about that one later. I guess I just set myself up for that. Well, I have 4 points today that I just want to discuss. 4 points, if you will, that I want to look at, and we'll try to understand when considering those in authority over us in the world. Point number one. This is going to be a no-brainer for us. Point number one. It is God who establishes positions of authority. God is the one who establishes people and positions of power and rule. The prophet Daniel brought this out in his prayer of thanks to God after God revealed King Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the great image and its interpretation to him. Let's go to Daniel chapter 2, please. Daniel chapter 2. We're going to read verses 20 and 21, familiar passages to many of us. But there's just so much in these stories. Daniel chapter 2, starting in verse 20. So Daniel had been given the dream and the interpretation by God. And Daniel thanked God. This is a prayer of thanksgiving. Daniel answered and said in verse 20, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his." Verse 21, "And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding." You see, in these passages we see that God is ultimately the creator and source of all authority. He is the one who raises up leaders and puts down leaders. We can also skip ahead a couple pages to Daniel 4 and verse 17 for another example. This here was the dream that King Nebuchadnezzar dreamed, where he became a beast of the field for 7 years after he proclaimed himself having his own power and his own authority. Part of that dream that was given to Nebuchadnezzar, he tells Daniel in verse 17, he's speaking here, "This decision is by the decree of the watchers and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will and sets it over the lowest of men." So this was part of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Then Daniel gives the interpretation. And in verse 25, we see this mentioned again in chapter 4 and verse 25. And he's telling the interpretation to the king. Verse 25 of chapter 4 in Daniel, "They shall drive you from men, your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses." And of course, not long after that, God proved that to Nebuchadnezzar. He did indeed spend 7 years in the wild. and was shown that God is the authority over men. God gave Nebuchadnezzar the authority that he had. So here in this dream, God reminded the king that his power, glory, and might, the authority that he had, was given to him by God himself. It was not of his personal doing. Again, it is God who establishes authority where he wills, whether as to kings or to presidents or governors or ministers or elders of the church. God establishes authority in others for his will and his plan and his purpose. Okay, I think we got that. Point number two. Because of point number one, we are to respect those positions of authority and those who serve in them. And we are to do as they instruct if their instruction does not conflict with the law of God. We are to respect those positions of authority, the people in them, and serve them and do their will if their instruction does not conflict with the law of God. You know, the Christians in Rome at the time of the Apostle Paul were wrestling with this pretty seriously, seeing firsthand what the Roman government was capable of and what it was becoming and what it was doing. The Apostle Paul had this to tell the Romans of the time, and he made it pretty clear. So Romans chapter 13, please. Stick your finger in Daniel if you could. We'll probably be coming back to that a couple more times or something. I don't know if a purse would fit. That probably wouldn't fit, but something. Romans chapter 13 and verses 1 and 2 for beginners. Romans chapter 13. Again, these are familiar verses to many of us. But this is Paul's instruction. Verse 1, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, verse 2, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. Now, the Nelson's New King James Version Study Bible has this to say about this part of the passage. It says, quote, God, the supreme sovereign, has ordained that there should be governing authorities. Every believer is to be subject to these various authorities, even if these authorities are as evil as Nero, who was the ruler of Rome at that time. He ruled from AD 54 to 68. The emperor of Rome, Nero, who cruelly persecuted Christians. When Paul wrote this letter, Nero was in power. Yet Paul exhorted the Roman believers to submit to Nero's authority because that authority was ordained by God himself. So when we as people disregard the rules and regulations made by those in authority, again, unless they violate the laws of God, it is as if we are disregarding God in the process that he has put in place. Paul continues in verse 3. We'll go ahead and read to verse 7 this time. Romans 13 and verse 3. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. Verse 4. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Verse 5, therefore you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. For because of this you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continuously to this very thing. And verse 7, render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, and honor to whom honor. In other words, we are to respect the governing authorities and do their will. You know, Jesus Christ taught this very same principle back in Matthew 22. He set an example for us. Let's go to Matthew chapter 22. Jesus Christ willingly put himself under submission to men during his time here on earth. Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 15, starting there, we're going to read through verse 22. So Matthew chapter 22 and verse 15 to start with. Then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. You know, well, like they often try to do, try to engineer some fault with him that they can point at. Verse 16, and they sent to him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God in truth, nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Trying to butter things up a little bit. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their wickedness. He knew what they were really up to. And he said, Why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money. So they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, Whose image and inscription is this? They said to him, Caesar's. And he said to them, Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. In other words, do what Caesar requires. Pay your taxes. Give to him what is his. He had the authority to collect taxes, and Jesus Christ acknowledged that. In verse 22, when they had heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. They didn't know what else to say. Again, referring to the Nelson's New King James Study Bible about this, referring to verse 21 in particular, they say, quote, In responding to his opponents, the Lord changed the verb they used from pay in verse 17 to render. Jesus said the word render, which literally means to pay back. I took a look at this word. It is in the Greek Strong's number 591, G591, and it means essentially to repay or recompense. So it's like giving back. To continue with the quote, Christ's followers have an obligation to earthly governments and to God. Believers today are citizens of a heavenly kingdom and strangers and sojourners on the earth. And they refer to 1 Peter 1 and verse 1 and 2 verse 11. It is the believer's responsibility to obey the law of the land until it becomes sinful to do so. And they refer to Romans 13 verses 1 through 7, which we just read. When the two realms are in conflict, Christians are to follow God, end quote. And Barnes' New Testament notes devote several pages to this section of Scripture in its commentary, but they note that, quote, as Christians are subject to God, so they are to honor God by honoring the arrangement which he has instituted for the government of mankind, end quote. This is hard sometimes. It's getting harder if we do not agree with what our leaders or those in authority are doing. But the end result's the same. If we try to argue our way out of a speeding ticket, what are we doing? Are we honoring authority? Something to consider. Brethren, authority is about submission to rule. Proper authority with proper submission brings order, respect, mutual benefit, and peace. But since the time of Adam and Eve, mankind has resisted authority, and we know the story there. And we also know Satan was the first being to disregard authority. We know the account, but let's go to Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah chapter 14, we'll read a little bit of this, verses 12 through 14, where this started. Isaiah chapter 14, starting in verse 12. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation, on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. And if he could have, he probably would have tried to be higher than the Most High. Humankind has been doing similar ever since, trying to usurp the rule of those rightly in authority over them and taking that onus upon themselves because they think they know more and they know better than the person in charge. Do we do that? I've had to ask myself that. Do I, in whatever way, disregard the authority of one who requires me to do something I don't want to do, instead doing what I want to do because I think I'm right? I've had to weigh myself in that regard, and I've found myself wanting at times. I remember an occasion or two as a child having to eat tuna fish on toast with peas for dinner. I was little, I was about 5 or 6. But when confronted with that, I had decided that I would rather starve than eat that. Nobody, not even my father, was going to make me eat that. It was horrifying. It wasn't right. It wasn't fair. Other kids don't eat this, do they? And then Dad, in his ultimate wisdom, would put me on the timer, and if I wasn't done with that dinner when that timer went off, it would be off to bed with me without dessert. And it was completely unjust that we didn't have a dog in the house that I could feed it to. Though I resisted, however, it's interesting to note that I ultimately would submit to his authority. Because going to bed early is just not something a young boy would really want to do. So that wore off real quick, and I learned my lesson. But brethren, what is it called when people deliberately do not properly submit to authority? It's called rebellion. What does God think of rebellion? Consider what Samuel told Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 15. Let's turn there, please. Again, this is an account that many of us are familiar with. 1 Samuel chapter 15. We're going to read verses 22 through 23. I will learn to talk momentarily. So consider what Samuel told Saul in 1 Samuel 15 after he had decided to take matters into his own hands. Instead of waiting for Samuel to return to give the offering, instead of having faith in God and submitting to Samuel's instructions. Here Saul had just got done essentially blaming the people for him taking matters into his own hands. We'll break into the account here, verse 22. So after Saul tried to pin it on the people, Samuel shot back with the following. So Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed then the fat of rams. For rebellion," verse 23, "is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you from being king." Rebellion is as a sin of witchcraft. This is what Samuel told Saul he was guilty of because he took matters into his own hands instead of trusting God and waiting for Samuel to respect Samuel's authority on the matter. I have another confession to make. I remember having quite a time when the first mask mandates came out. When I found out that wearing a mask was going to be required in given situations, I accepted it completely. No, I can't say that. I stamped my feet, figuratively speaking, of course. I had a fit, take that as you will, and I said, in my mind and in my heart, they can't make me do that. It's stupid, and they don't even work. And for a while, I was a very unhappy person. I only wore the mask because I'd get in trouble if I didn't. So after some time of God working with me, I finally reconciled this matter in my heart by realizing that by wearing a mask, I have an opportunity to demonstrate love toward my neighbor, my fellow human being. Love your neighbor is the second great commandment that Jesus Christ gave when he was here on this earth. Whether or not a mask is effective in a given situation, I'm not going to debate any of that, but this is what I had to reconcile with myself. Giving ease and peace to one single person's mind because I'm wearing one is love toward neighbor. It is telling my neighbor, I care about you, I'm concerned about you, so I'm going to do this. I realized that I could actually get along with the inconvenience, the discomfort, and everything else that goes with it if it meant my neighbor could have peace of mind. I could ease their fear, however they might perceive or be having that fear, and show love and outgoing concern toward them. What a wonderful opportunity to be a light to another human being in exchange for some humility and just a little bit of inconvenience and discomfort, as well as an opportunity to respect what those in authority over us are telling us to do. Now that I reflect on it, I'd say it was worth it. Let's look at another example. Let's look at David's example, since we're right near the area, 1 Samuel chapter 24, just a few pages ahead. Let's go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel chapter 24. And in this part of 1 Samuel, Saul is doggedly pursuing David with the intent of doing away with him. He was a threat to him, and he wanted him put down. And that's what he told his soldiers, those with him, to do. So David here in 1 Samuel chapter 24, starting in verse 4 is what I want to, where I want to begin. But David had a perfect opportunity to take authority into his own hands. After all, he knew he was going to be king after Saul, right? And Saul was doggedly pursuing him to kill him, to do away with him. So in verse 4 of 1 Samuel chapter 24, then the men of David said to him, "This is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you.' And David arose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe." He was going to show Saul that he was vulnerable, that David could have killed him right there. But then something happened. Verse 5. Now it happened afterward that David's heart troubled him because he had cut Saul's robe. David's conscience was bothering him. He's going, this isn't right. This isn't something I should be doing or pursuing. Verse 6. And he, David, said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." David acknowledged that though Saul meant to do him evil, he continued to respect the position of authority that Saul held. At the moment, he was still king. He acknowledged that Saul was still the Lord's anointed, and he was ultimately not willing to usurp that position of authority and take matters into his own hands. It seems we as humanity are too often more than willing to do that very thing. I've caught myself in that position on more than one occasion. Again, like a rule or regulation that we might feel unjust or unfair or stupid, whatever it might be, I cannot simply take matters into our own hands. I'm pretty sure that David was having a difficult time with Saul's edict he was trying to carry out. Saul wanted him dead. And yet David did not put down Saul's authority over him. We'll just look at the next few verses here where David is talking to Saul in the next several verses after Saul realizes that David's in there with him. Let's skip down to verse 8. 1 Samuel 24, verse 8. David also arose afterward, went out of the cave, and called out to Saul, saying, "My Lord the King." And when Saul looked behind him, David ran him through with a spear. No, that's not what happened. David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed down. Verse 9, and David said to Saul, "Why do you listen to the words of men who say indeed David seeks you harm? Look, this day," verse 10, "your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my eye spared you, and I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed." David said this to Saul. Verse 11, "Moreover, my father," see, that word father is interesting. It basically means leader or king, but it almost has an endearing quality to it. "Moreover, my father, see, yes, see the corner of your robe in my hand. For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you. Know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand. I still respect your authority. And I have not sinned against you, and yet you hunt my life to take it." So Saul was still king. David submitted to that authority. What of us if we were in that position? Again, something to consider. You don't always know until you're actually there, but I trust we have a pretty good imagination and we have the words before us. What would we do? How would we handle it? What of those whom we work for, our employers? You know, if we want to keep our jobs, we do what they ask of us, right? Even if we disagree with what they ask of us or how to do it. You know, we can try to discuss it with them and reason with them about it, maybe show them a better way if you can, but ultimately we're going to do what they ask of us, right? If we want to keep our jobs, unless, again, it conflicts with the law of God. And what of children? You know, we learn about authority at an early age as children. Kind of like earlier with the dinner I didn't want to eat. Colossians 3 and verse 20, I'll just give you that for your reference, but it just says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord." As children respect the authority of their parents and obey them, so we as God's children do the same toward our Father in heaven, right? Brethren, if we're to help and teach people and have authority in the kingdom of God as kings and priests, which is meaning rulers with authority and educators, we must be able to endure the same discomforts, the same injustices from the various authorities as they themselves have gone through. So that we can understand what they went through, we will be able to say, "Yes, I've been there. I understand. This is how you deal with it." And that's what Jesus Christ did for us and for all of humanity. Think about everything he suffered at the hands of authority, the rulers of the time. And then consider that he made a point of submitting to them. That was his example. The only time he crossed swords with them, so to speak, was where God's laws and way of life was concerned. He set an example for all of us, and he was always submissive to his Father. You know, I have to consider, you know, what if he had told Pilate, who had been given authority over him for a time, what if he had told Pilate, "Nah, I don't think this is right. It's not fair. It's dumb. So I'm not going to let you do this to me." And he turned around and left. You know, he totally could have done that. He was human. Where would we be if he had done that? Where would the hope for humanity be? You know, we're in a time when we must learn to discern and carefully weigh our viewpoint against God's and see if they really match in a given situation. We heard a lot of that from Dr. Hanway's sermonette earlier. his discussion of judgment, righteous judgment. But we have to see if they really match in a given situation where we are instructed to do something by someone in authority. We're going to go back to Daniel now. In remembering Daniel's three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and I try in vain, but I keep trying to remember their original names, and when I need them, they never come. So I call them Daniel's three friends. So Daniel's three friends, they had to make that same decision. So we'll discuss that in the next point. Point number three, while showing proper respect, we are not to do or imitate the evil that may be done by or asked of us by those in authority. I'll read that again. While showing proper respect, we are not to do or imitate the evil that may be done by or asked of us by those in authority, whether it's how they live or how they rule. When faced with a choice, God and His way always come first. Sounds elementary, it sounds like, yeah, but when you're in the thick of it, it can get tested. That's what happened to Daniel's three friends. They were confronted with their disregard for King Nebuchadnezzar's command to bow before his idol. We know the story. Daniel chapter 3, go back there. I did not keep my finger in there because I talk with my hands. Daniel chapter 3 and start in verse 16. So basically they had been ratted out by some of their fellow employees, I guess you might say. They were turned in to the king. O king, these three men show no regard for your idol or for you. So naturally Nebuchadnezzar got a little irate. So he quizzed the three friends, Daniel's three friends, on whether they were going to do this. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. Now, the New Living Translation translates that last part to say, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. Okay? Just trying to get a tone for this. Verse 17, if that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from your burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. So they acknowledged him as king. They acknowledged his authority over them, but they firmly told him that they would not do this thing that would violate their belief in the one true God. They would not submit to such a sinful request, no matter what befell them. And we know the story. Sure enough, they got tossed in. Nebuchadnezzar was incensed, pardon the pun, and he had them thrown in. But we know how it ended, too. God protects those in whatever way, shape, or form that may take. God protects those who love and obey him. But as Christians, we have to learn to discern, to know where to draw the line, as it were, when leadership begins to legislate outside the laws of God. Because we cannot go down that road. We cannot join the crowd and worship the idol. And sometimes in these cases, as we saw with Daniel's three friends, there can be ramifications for our actions when we respectfully decline, again, as there certainly were for these three men. But are we willing to risk that, to obey our Father in heaven? We certainly can and should pray to God for intervention in a matter such as that, as Daniel and his three friends had to do repeatedly with King Nebuchadnezzar. You know, one of our friends, my wife and I, one of our friends a while back, was summoned for jury duty on, I think, a grand jury, but I'm not sure about that. So she obeyed the summons and reported in. But as the session went on, she determined that she could not serve as a juror in good conscience. And if she were compelled to do so, there would be a hung jury, basically, one that could not render a unanimous judgment because she would not participate in that judgment. And she informed the presiding judge of this decision. In response, the judge nodded, told her, "You understand I could put you in jail for contempt of court for this, right?" I had to think, being on the spot like that, how would I have responded? "You're under the gun. You don't do this, this is going to happen to you." Well, she said, "Yes, Your Honor, I understand," and left it at that. The judge nodded his head again and then dismissed her. She was free for the day. Again, like Daniel's three friends, God saved her out of a situation where she would be forced to violate her conscience and beliefs to do something leading to sin. God protected her, brought her out of it. Point number four, the final point. What should we do when we see or are subject to these types of things ourselves? Instead of criticizing, ridiculing, or rebelling against authority, what should I do? When we see our leaders weak in this regard, we're to pray for them. Pray for those in positions of authority. Why? Why pray for them? In Paul's first letter to Timothy, he made note of this, that we are to pray for our earthly leaders. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 2, please. 1 Timothy chapter 2. And we'll read verses 1 and 2. As soon as I find 1 Timothy. Again, this isn't my Bible, so maybe they're somewhere else. I hear my wife snickering over there. Okay, 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verses 1 and 2. This is Paul talking to Timothy, and he says, "Therefore, I exhort first of all that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men," all people. Verse 2, "for kings and all who are in authority." Why? "That we may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and reverence." The authorities are established. The reason that they should be established is to see good and order in our society. And though they may or may not know it, they need help. They need help. And we need their help to be able to worship in peace and safety. Barnes' New Testament note speaks on 1 Timothy 2 and verse 2. According to them, quote, "The meaning here is that while all men should be the subjects of prayer, those should be particularly remembered before the throne of grace are those who are in authority. The reason is that so much depends on their character and their plans that the security of life, liberty, and property depends so much on them. God has power to influence their hearts." And we know that with Pharaoh and Nebuchadnezzar and many other leaders in the Bible. "And to incline them to what is just and equal. And hence we should pray that a divine influence may descend upon them," end quote. Brethren, God is judging us now. We know that. I personally view the year 2020 as having been a time for us, the people of God, of testing, of proving, of learning to discern. God is getting us ready for what is coming soon. And in his love and his mercy and compassion for us, he wants us to learn. He wants us to practice. He wants us to grow in his way and how he views things. He loves us. He doesn't want to see any of us fail. And how we deal with authority is part of this. I ask all of us, myself included, to consider, how are we doing? How are we handling this? Are we doing so in a manner that is in line with God's law and way and feeling, and in a way that he will find pleasing? In conclusion, as we have seen, God created authority. He established it for the good of us all. We are to respect and obey those positions of authority. If the authorities commit sin or do evil, we still show them respect, but we are not to follow that example. Instead, we do the law and will of God, and we are to pray for our leaders, those in authority over us. Our human leaders are just that, they're human, just like us. At times they are weak, they are uncertain, misinformed, openly disregarding of God's laws and ways, but they are still our leaders in matters of human physical government. And we're instructed here in God's word to give them the respect due the position. There will come a day when all will be held accountable for their actions, and that includes our leaders, those in authority. 1 Peter 4 and verse 5 says they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. But one day soon, they too will have their chance to learn the ways of God, and they will be shown what true, perfect, righteous rule and authority looks like. They will see and learn true, perfect, peaceful governance as our Father in heaven and his Son show us now.